Welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here today because we have a special show. Our guest today is an author. He is a columnist. He's also a Wharton graduate, a real estate developer, and he's also the CEO and founder, one of the three founders of Historic Tours of America. It's my privilege to welcome Mr. Chris Belland. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rod. It's nice to be here.
Absolutely. I'm honored to have you on the show. Before we get started and go back to the roots of your passion for history and why you made the decisions you've made over the years to bring you to this point in life, tell us a little bit about Historic Tours of America for the folks that aren't familiar with the company.
Sure. I was born and raised in Miami, so I in fact been down to Key West on a number of occasions. But in 1973, after I graduated from the University of Pennsylvania, I came down here for the weekend, and I've been here ever since. So you can imagine that I fell in love with this beautiful town. It's out on the former farthest frontier of the young America. The architecture is Spanish, Cuban, New England, and island, and it's just a beautiful place, and I just immediately fell in love with it, and have stayed here ever since. I'd always been interested in history, and of course in the early part of the 19th century, Key West was the largest city in the entire state of Florida, and it was basically...
That's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It was established on the industry of wrecking, which was the salvage of wrecked ships out on our reef. I mean, this is a very wealthy town. In fact, the wealthiest city in the continental United States.
Wow. A lot of people probably imagined Key West being the major city as opposed to Miami, didn't they?
Well, they think of Miami today as the major city that it is, but when Key West was the largest city in the state, Miami was nothing more than a trading post at the mouth of the Miami River. There was only about 100 people that lived there during the middle part of the 19th and latter part of the 19th century.
Just a sleepy little town, right?
Yes, indeed.
And you and I were talking, I guess this is a good time to kind of, for the folks that aren't familiar with the history of South Florida and Miami, you and I were talking about the barefoot mailman.
That's right.
It's kind of an interesting story, isn't it?
Well, it is. We lived in South Miami, which when I moved there, I was 5 years old. That was in 1953. The area was still very rural. It was, not many houses at all where I lived.
And you were in the, you were in the Kendall area, right?
That's right. And my across the street neighbor, he became my best friend. His grandfather was, I always called him Captain Bob. I have no idea what his real name was, but
Captain Bob.
He was a barefoot mailman, and they were the guys that would take boats from island to island and then walk the mail around from Miami to Key West and back again.
That's amazing. Just hard to imagine that today, you know?
It is. So much has transpired, and it happened in a relatively short period of time, too.
Amazing. And you, when you were a kid, you didn't you work with, I think you said you were around 5 years old, you worked in bean fields, didn't you?
Well, no, I didn't work in bean fields.
It didn't work at all. Okay.
We had a bean field next to our house. My father bought 2 acres down in Kendall, and there was a bean field next door. There were some folks that raised chickens across the street, and it was like I said, it was very it was very rural at the time.
Very rural. Well, we'll pick this up in a minute. Right now, we're going to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back after this quick break.
Did you know History Means Business membership levels are now available? As a member, you can network with like-minded people and enjoy special discounts. Gold and Platinum members will journey across America to explore the historic places found in our award-winning documentary film, History Means Business America. Visit historymeansbusiness.com for more details. Now, back to Rod.
Chris, you were telling me before about your introduction into the Keys. Your dad had a boat. I guess it was in the beginning you were at Elliott Key, right?
Well, yes. My father and mother, after World War II, they, of course, settled in Miami. They were both from Pennsylvania. And my father had the opportunity. He was a real estate broker, and he had the opportunity to buy some property on the northern part of the Keys, which stretched from Key Biscayne, which is now part of Miami, of course, and stretches all the way to Key Largo. But he bought about 200 acres of land on Elliott's Key and the Ragged Keys, Totten Key, and Rhodes Key. And he had
it's a nice chunk of land.
Well, it was, and it's a beautiful string of islands that his dream was to connect Key Biscayne to those islands by way of a causeway and take that all the way down to Key Largo. And of course that didn't happen. The federal government came and they condemned the property and bought it from us, and that became the Biscayne National Monument. But when I was a kid I was growing up there, there were several remains of the early pioneers that lived on Elliott's Key, which was mainly for the purpose of growing pineapples. And they grew pineapples and then shipped them over to Miami, and they were taken to the northern markets from there. They had a monopoly on pineapples, but somebody smuggled out the tops of pineapples from which you grow new pineapples, and they expanded the industry. I know that was one of the main reasons Henry Flagler built his railroad down through Miami and into the Florida Keys. He was going to pick up fresh vegetables and what have you from Cuba and the lower islands to transport to the northern American markets.
Amazing. You know, my grandfather, you know, as you know, I'm from Miami as well, and he grew pineapples in his backyard. So that was always a treat to go see him pick the pineapples in the backyard as a kid. But your passion, the seeds for your passion for history, that began, didn't that happen when your dad took you to the Barnacle House?
Well, it did. As a young boy, my father, he and I went to the house that's now in Coconut Grove. It's called the Barnacle, as you say, and it was the home of Commodore Ralph Monroe, who came to Miami by way of being invited there by Charles Peacock, who he met in his home in Staten Island, New York. He was looking over the bay one day, and there was a boat in trouble, and he went out and saved the boat and the passengers, one of which was Charles Peacock, who invited him in gratitude to come down to Miami. He had the only hotel in the Miami area at the time, and he told Ralph Monroe that if you come down, I'll give you land and you can build on it. And Ralph Monroe, who's his wife Mary, was not well at the time, and he thought the moving south would be good for her. He did indeed move to Coconut Grove in the 1880s, and he built his home there called the Barnacle, and he became one of the most famous boat builders of his time in his backyard. And one of the most interesting things about Commodore Monroe was that he was a very accomplished dry plate photographer.
And, is that right?
Yeah. I used to go there when the Monroes still lived in the house.
Wow.
Not Ralph Monroe. He had passed away, but his son, Worth Monroe, and his wife, Mary, used to live in the house before it was taken over as a state museum. But they went up in the attic after the Monroes moved out, and there was a big trunk in the attic, and there were very carefully wrapped dry plate photographs of Miami in the 1880s, 1885. And they were made into a book, and I highly recommend it. It's called The Forgotten Frontier. It was all these photographs of early Miami, and the Indians who used to come down the Miami River to trade pelts and feathers at the Brickell Trading Post at the mouth of the Miami River. So all that was documented by Commodore Monroe, and it's my favorite book. It's quite a legacy to
read. Wow. Yeah. We will definitely check that out. And what's amazing is he was a contemporary of Mrs. Tuttle.
I believe that she came a little bit later.
Okay.
Yeah, she bought the army barracks that used to be also on the mouth of the Miami River that were built during the Second Seminole War, and she lived in those barracks with her family for quite some time. And in the Great Freeze, I believe it was in the 1885-ish or so, she sent Henry Flagler some fresh orange blossoms from the Miami area, saying, you know, the weather's fine down here, come on down, because the whole northern part of the state had been devastated by this freeze.
That was 1894, right? Right around there, perhaps?
I think it was 1885, but I'm not 100%.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, he was encouraged to bring his railroad down from Palm Beach down to Miami. And
the Florida East Coast Railway, right?
Yes, sir. That's it. And, of course, Henry Flagler, a lot of people don't know this, but he was John D. Rockefeller's partner in the establishment of
Standard Oil.
Standard Oil, boy. Yeah.
That's right. We actually talk about that, and we explore that in our documentary film, History Means Business America. We talk about Mrs. Tuttle and how Mr. Flagler brought that railway from St. Augustine all the way down to Key West.
Well, that's true. Henry Flagler was one of the wealthiest men in the world at the time, being John D. Rockefeller's partner. And when he retired, he went into the hotel business first in St. Augustine, and then he decided that he would build hotels along the east coast of Florida. But of course, there was no transportation or roads, so his idea was
right.
A railroad from St. Augustine along the east coast. And of course, that's exactly what he did. And
an amazing feat, right?
Oh, yeah. It was alternately called Flagler's Folly and the Eighth Wonder of the Modern World. It was
something. Flagler's Folly. I guess he proved them wrong, right?
Well, sort of. I mean, without Flagler, Florida never would have been developed as it was.
Right.
Kind of the hobby of one of the world's richest men, but he was in the hotel business. He built the railroad. Railroad never made money, and you know, building it down to Key West was considered impossible because it was There was amazing. Like on the order of 42 bridges from the jumping off point at the end of the peninsula all the way down to Key West. But wow. he did
complete 42 bridges.
Yeah, he completed wow. that in 1912. Was the day the railroad arrived to Key West.
1912. Well, listen, we're going to take another quick break. And then when we come back, Chris is going to tell us about his first business adventure that he started in high school. So listen, we'll be right back after this quick message.
As you listen to today's podcast, we hope you will be inspired and find helpful hints from the past, sparking your imagination and helping you find solutions to your challenge. Remember, you can visit our websites anytime, historymeansbusiness.com and rodlancemorton.com for inspiration. Check out the trailers and clips to our award-winning documentary film, History Means Business America, with links to securely watch on Vimeo on demand. Now, back to Rod.
Welcome back. And Chris, we were talking before the break about this business adventure you started with a high school friend, right? And I believe, actually something you knew from eighth grade, is that right?
That's right. That really takes me back. I'd always had an interest in antiques and antique arms. And eventually that led to an interest in documents and manuscripts, letters and things of that nature. And my best friend in eighth grade also had a great interest in that. And we started a mail order catalog for autographs, documents, and manuscripts. And we came in contact with some very, very interesting things. We had all the papers of Timothy Pickering, who was the quartermaster general during the Revolutionary War, all of his ledgers and letters and all kinds of things. We also bought a trunk of Civil War recruiting posters, and boy, I sure wish I had those back again.
Oh, I'll bet.
They were quite valuable, but just one thing led to another, and we used to issue a monthly catalog of things that we'd find and put out for sale.
Wow. So pretty successful, wasn't it?
Well, for two 14-year-old boys, it sure was, yes.
That gave you the appetite for the entrepreneurial spirit, didn't it?
It did. It did. It just showed me early on that if you have an interest in something and you pursue it, that you'll probably be successful with it.
Absolutely. Have that passion and something that you really love, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, I know you in the 70s, you and your two other partners created the Historic Tours of America, but you also, when did you start developing real estate in the Keys? Was that also at the same time or?
Well, yeah, the first thing that we did was not Historic Tours of America. The first thing was in 1973, I moved here from Miami. And the entire city had been on the government payroll since the Navy first came here in 1823. But after World War II, when this town was a huge Navy base, it started to decline, and the Navy kept moving out, and finally they declared the base government surplus, and they moved out completely except for their airfield up on Boca Chica. So all of the businesses that were on the main street here in Key West, Duval Street, jewelry stores and clothing stores and bars and restaurants, they all closed down. And of course, that was the best time in the world to be buying property, which is exactly what my partner
right.
did. We bought quite a bit of property up and down Duval Street and started restoring it. And it was, an example of what you could do with these old properties to make them productive again. And what we did rippled out into the rest of the community and people started having an interest in the old conch houses, the old frame houses all over the island, and it made Key West the destination that it is today in the state of Florida.
Wow, you played a major role in that. And you, and I guess it was a few years later that you bought and I guess built the conch train. Was that?
Conch? Oh, no, we actually.
I think I didn't say that right, but.
we actually had a tourist development up farther from our real estate project on Duval Street, and we needed a way to get tourists down, from back and forth. So we actually had a trolley company that we bought from a fellow who was running a sightseeing company. It was called the Conch Town Trolley, and it was a converted bread truck pulling a boat trailer with a plywood platform on it and bench seating. It was pretty rudimentary, but we bought that was kind of the beginning of Historic Tourism of America, though we didn't call it that. And in 1980, we bought three brand new faux style trolley vehicles, and that was the beginning of it. We had six of them. And we were very successful with it, and it gave us the opportunity to buy the Conch Tour Train in 1983 from Wometco Enterprises, which at the time was a billion-dollar conglomerate owned by Mitchell Wolfson, who was actually, he was from Key West. But they were headquartered in Miami, Florida, and they owned Coca-Cola Bottling and the Miami Wow. Aquarium and vending all over the Caribbean and the Conch Train.
Wow.
And and movie theaters too. And we were able to buy that, and that was truly the beginning of what became Historic Tourism of America.
Wow. It all started in Key West.
Yes, sir.
You're in seven cities, right? You're St. Augustine. Of course, it all started in Key West, but then St. Augustine, Boston, Savannah, D.C., and what are the other? I think I'm missing two.
Well, we're in Key West, St. Augustine, Savannah, Washington, D.C., Boston, Massachusetts, Nashville, Tennessee, and San Diego, California.
Wow. And you guys are known as the America's Storytellers.
Yes, sir.
That's just incredible. And what we're going to do, we're going to go to another quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about the three areas of history and how history can be applicable today and possibly solve some of our challenges. And we're going to get your take on that after this quick break, right after this message. We'll be right back.
Did you know Rod also has a blog? Visit rodlancemorton.com, and while you're in there, check out Rod's exciting book, Buttonwood 24. Read the reviews and see for yourself. It's filled with Wall Street history, mystery, and romance. If you haven't seen Rod in person, his events are fun, exciting, and inspiring. Now back to Rod.
All right, welcome back. Before the break, we were talking about the three areas of history that we cover on the podcast, and we went over that last season. And then this season, we're visiting the cities, the historic cities that our film, History Means Business America, was filmed. And of course, South Florida, we feature South Florida from Palm Beach to Key West. We filmed on location in St. Augustine, where of course, Historic Tours of America has a great facility. And the three areas of history that we always cover are the pioneers, the pages of history, the living history of senior citizens. Chris, you're too young for that, but we'll go ahead and let you slide today and cover the living history part. And when we look back at history to make it applicable, it takes a little bit of imagination to try to make it applicable today for challenges that we're facing today, to come up with something that would work, that a pioneer had invented or had forged many, many years ago, because technology changes, social mores change, and perhaps we're in a different industry that that particular person was in. And so to get into the pioneer mindset and to spark our imagination, one of the best ways is to appreciate, and one way at least, is to appreciate nature and get back to nature. And I know you live all around nature in the Keys. What's your take on that? I mean, as far as the pages of history, what has that meant to you over the years?
Well, I think that the whole mission of Historic Tourism America is to turn back those pages of history and allow us to understand, or help us understand, what it was that compelled people to do some of the things that they did that determined what our country became. And some of this is nothing more than asking people to suspend reality for a moment and let themselves naively go back to those times and try to put themselves in the position of those pioneers. For example, the Boston Tea Party museum that we built is a very good example. We've created a scenario there where people are transported back in time through our costume characters, through participating in the eventful meeting of December 16th, 1773, where they determined to march down to Griffin's Wharf and destroy the tea. And it was a very symbolic thing because, quite frankly, you could buy tea on the black market cheaper than, tea on the black market was actually more expensive than the tea that would have been subject to the tax. But it was symbolic in the context of that the tax was being levied upon us without representation,
right?
And that whole endeavor was, of course, the spark that ignited the Revolutionary War. Now, you mentioned Boston Tea Party people, and they kind of sort of have an idea of what it was, but the fact is that it was the single most important event leading up to the American Revolution. And we
absolutely
try to carry that through with all of our museum and tour offerings, whether it's the oldest jail in St. Augustine or the American Prohibition Museum in Savannah. These offerings to the general public are to tell stories so that we can learn from what the pioneers did and why they did it and what the after effects were.
Absolutely. And, I really commend you and what you've done, what your team has done and put together. And I recommend to all of our listeners to my wife and I have gone on your trolley tour many times in St. Augustine, and we just can't get enough of it. I mean, you just learn so much, and there's so much to take in that you can do it many times, because as you're thinking about what the tour guide is telling us and revealing to us about all the historic places and sites on the tour, sometimes you might not actually absorb everything that they're telling you because you're mesmerized by all this information. And it just gives you a greater appreciation for America. And it also, like you said, gives us an opportunity to really learn from it and to inspire us today.
It does. One of the most inspirational things that we do is we're the stewards of the Harry S. Truman Little White House here in Key West. And a lot of people don't realize that before there was a Camp David, this is where the President of the United States came after World War II and spent all of his working vacations here. And when Harry Truman left office, he was not considered to have been a very good president. And yet today, when we reflect on the things that he did, much of which was done from right here in Key West. He is now considered one of the top sixth or seventh most influential presidents the United States has ever had. And that's a story.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a story that you just don't hear it. But by being able to go through his house and to see the artifacts that we have and to hear the tour guides tell you about his life, you suddenly realize what an important man he truly was.
Oh, I totally agree. Absolutely. It's interesting how we, with a little hindsight, we can have a little more clarity on what just took place. Like
that's
you said,
true. That's true.
Mr. Truman, President Truman.
You know, something else, when you asked about what history has meant to me, our company also is the only interpretive service in Arlington National Cemetery. We host over 500,000 guests a year on our tour.
And 500,000.
You know, it's really a pays an homage to the old saying that those that forget history are destined to repeat it.
And you know, that's for sure.
Being able to take people through Arlington National Cemetery, you suddenly understand the gravity of what so many gave to our country and the world, and it's quite an honor for our company to be doing that.
Wow, absolutely. It really hits home, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. And then in closing, can't believe the time has flown by. Could you give us, you know, for our young viewers and for our young listeners that are just starting out in life, what could you give some advice? What area would you, for example, this question, President Ford was asked this question a few years before he passed away. A journalist asked him this question. He was about, I think he passed away at age 93. So in his early 90s, he was asked this question. He said, learn communication because it's critical to success in just about anything you do. Warren Buffett had echoed that same sentiment. Do you have any other pearls of wisdom that you can share for us, for our young people starting out?
Well, yeah, I do. I would certainly echo those two fine gentlemen's sentiments. We are unfortunately becoming a more disconnected world because of the iPhones and tablets and computers and everything, and we're now texting people instead of picking up a phone and calling them. And The ability to communicate through the spoken word or the written word is becoming that much more challenging and, quite frankly, that much more valuable to those that do it well. But I would tell anybody going out into the world, you know, perhaps after high school sometime, is to do something that you love, because if you do that, everything else will fall in line. The money, career, happiness, everything. If you're doing something that you truly care about, something that gets you out of bed in the morning, that to me has always been the great key to success.
Oh, I love it. What great advice. Just do what you love, right? And you can't go wrong. Pursue what you love. And I want to mention before we wrap up, for our listeners that want to check out some of your tours, learn more about the Historic Tours of America. Your website is historictours.com. I'll say that again. It's historictours.com. Chris, it's been a real honor to have you on the show. I mean, I just really appreciate all that you've shared with us. It's been a true inspiration this time with you.
Well, thank you, Rod. I appreciate your kind words.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You betcha.
For the show today. And until next time, remember, have a historic day. See you next time.
The copyright owner of this podcast is Morton Imagine Company.